Welcome to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass with Brett Henderson, founder of Strategic Wealth Endeavor. We've created a community of veteran entrepreneurs just like you who are ready to help you succeed. Our podcast provides expert advice and resources so you can overcome any obstacle in your way. With the help of Brett and veteran guest experts, you can build a battle-ready business mindset to take your company to the next level. Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass. Now, on to the show.
The CEO of an independent insurance company and a podcast host. That is David Johnson. David is CEO of Fortis Life Group, where he works with transitioning military, military spouses, and veteran-owned businesses. But Brett, he also hosts the David Johnson Show, where he tells the stories of the veteran community. And I do believe between you, Brett, and your guest, the word is spreading about vets. So, Brett, please welcome David.
Thanks, Patrice. Appreciate that. Well, welcome, David. How are you?
Thank you, Brett. Happy to be here. Thank you. And thank you for everything that you're doing.
Likewise, man. Back at you. I think this is a pretty cool relationship, an interesting podcast. I like to start off letting everyone know our relationship. So have you and I ever met in person?
No.
Are you a client of mine?
No.
Good. So, well, maybe not a good thing, but hey, that Freudian slip there. But that being said, it provides a dynamic. You and I met maybe, what, a month ago or so on LinkedIn?
Yeah, something like that, right?
And I think the power of LinkedIn, not only LinkedIn, but the veteran relationship, the veteran heritage. When you and I connected within 15 minutes, how did you feel?
I felt great. Yeah. Instant connection. And after chatting on the phone, that really had solidified things.
Yeah. And with that, I don't mind. Can we say this? I don't know if we can say this or not. I'm just going to say it. So you actually referred me a client within 10 minutes of you and I chatting before we even ended our first call in 15 minutes. We literally never spoke before. And before 15 minutes was up in our first conversation, you actually referred me one of your clients.
Correct. Yeah. You jumped in. They needed your services. They needed a 401k for their company. And I felt comfortable, made the introduction, and I like doing business like that.
Yeah. And that's just an awesome feeling. And I felt amazing at the same time that you trusted me that quickly. And I think it's all because of our veteran heritage. And after you shared a little bit about who you are and what you're doing, and you were vulnerable enough right off the bat, not knowing me, to share about one of your failures, I think that was huge. So I just want to say thank you. And for all the veteran entrepreneurs that are listening out there, if you don't have your unit now, you don't have that brotherhood or sisterhood or camaraderie, touch base with any veterans on LinkedIn. 99% are still amazing people that are looking for the same, right? The whole reason I reached out for you is I'm looking for other like-minded entrepreneurs that are veterans that are trying to do something with their own life and to give back and serve the community again. And you and I connected right off the bat. It's like, bam, you're almost like my brother from another mother because you're doing similar stuff, just in a different location. So that being said, why don't you tell me just briefly about your military background and where you are right now?
Yeah, military background, pretty simple. Long story, less long. I was born in Saudi Arabia and speak Arabic. So I joined the Army under their language program back in 2000. I spent 10 years in Saudi Arabia growing up, and it's, you know, pre-9/11, so different world. Joined the Army under their language program. Long story, less long. Ended up getting into, recruited into the special operations community and did a lot of stuff there. Had my 21st, 22nd, and 23rd birthday in Iraq. That was back in 03, 04, 05.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, right. Happy birthday. I think somebody had like somebody. I won't say names, had a little shot of something. So on my 21st birthday, I remember Northern Iraq outside of Erbil, Kirkuk area, we took a little shot of whatever that was outside the tent. So that was cool right after the ground invasion. So that was fun. And then, you know, it was a hard decision, but ultimately ETS, you know, got out, utilized the GI Bill, went to college and all that kind of stuff.
What year did you get out? Sorry, what year?
Yeah, I got out in 2006.
So you were in, what, 2000 through so 6 years or?
Yep, 6 years and 4 months, but who's counting? And then, and then moved back to Phoenix, where I'm from, and ended up going to Arizona State University and graduated there in 2010. And I kind of been on my own ever since. I had one job. I've had one job literally since I've ETS'd in 06. And I've been on my own ever since. The job route wasn't for me, not knocking it. I get it. If that's your path and career, I love that. I support that. It just wasn't for me personally. So I like I said, I've been on my own ever since.
Well, let's talk about that. Actually, so David, that's good information. What I'd like to do is take two steps backwards, if that's okay. And we'll come back to your decision to not really be in corporate America to work on your own. However, do you mind sharing a little bit about your mindset of how you felt after 6 years, or did you know you were getting out after 1 year or after 4 years and started another two? Did you do four and add another two? And when did you make the decision? Like, this, the Army just isn't for me any longer. It's not a career.
Great question. So my initial enlistment was 5, but due to some other stuff in the unit I was in, I did sign up for another year. So 6 years and a bit total. And you know, it's funny. People say, why did you join? I don't really have a strong reason why I joined. People say, why did you get out? I don't really have a strong reason why I got out. Something kind of just said, get out and try your hand on the outside. I can't point to a specific reason. It's very strange. To this day, I've thought about it a lot, and I really don't have a strong reason why I got out. And then, you know, I got out in 06, and I say this a lot. I think there are a lot more programs, services, organizations now to help transitioning veterans. Like, when I got out, I literally out-processed in like a week or two, you know, slap on the ass, got a little lapel pen, and hey, thanks for playing. And I loaded all my stuff in my car and drove home. Yep. You know, you hear nowadays about, you know, internship programs and this and that. And there was none of that when I was getting out. So when I got out, it was literally back home, roommated with a dude I went to high school with for a while, my best friend from high school, until I kind of got my own apartment. And the thing to do was just, hey, you're going to go to college. You got the GI Bill. That's what you're going to do. So there wasn't really much thought elsewhere on job, career, path. It was just go to college. And then things started just to fall in place, I guess.
No, that's good. I have to concur. As you're sharing your story, obviously, I go back in my mind and go through my story. And I think I shared before, I was kind of blackballed as a Marine officer when you're getting out. Like, if you're just doing 4 years, everyone else stays in, it's like, you're done. So actually, they gave me a nice, what do they call those? An investigation to do. So I was trying to EAS. I was trying to get out. I had a flight I wanted to take to Iceland when I was getting out. Like, nope, you can't leave until you do this investigation. I'm like, really? So they gave me that. So I was running around, and I was thinking it was right before the 4th July, 96. So everyone's getting ready to take off. And I was running around talking to everyone I could about this. I can't remember, something was lost or missing, and had to go try and track down what happened, where it went, and why. It's like, oh, you're getting out here. Go do this before you get out. You can't get out until you do this. So just like you, once my investigation was done, everybody's gone. The 96 happened. So literally, that was it. I was just there by myself, turning my investigation to the XO, and he's like, okay, thanks. I'm like, I guess that's the end of my Marine Corps career. All right.
Just like that.
Yeah. I jumped in my Jeep and drove away, but I did have EAS. I had 90 days terminal leave, and I went to Iceland and Europe for 90 days, and that was so phenomenal. Cool. So I had the last laugh there. It was amazing experience, right? But we'll talk about that later. So yeah, I concur with what you just shared. There was nothing when you and I were getting out. I was 02, you're 06. So I think the mid-2000s, they were still knee deep in Iraq and starting Afghanistan heavily. So there just wasn't the presence to try and help veterans as much as there is now. I have connection requests now from active military officers that are still in, that are getting internships at corporate America when they're out. I'm like, what? How is this? Where did that come from? That's a whole other world. So I think, yeah, things definitely have changed since you and I were in, which is good. And so I'll go back to you. You shared that you tried corporate America a little bit. It wasn't for you. Do you mind sharing a little bit more on how you felt or how you came to that determination?
Yeah, I really didn't try it much. I couldn't even say corporate America. I had a job for 3 weeks while I was going to college. I worked at a bank, and it was literally, I'm in Iraq 3 times, and now I'm at a bank. That's a pretty big shift. And I remember this customer that was just off the charts, rude and disrespectful. And I walked out. And I'm like, that was my last job. I'm like, I'm not playing this game. And then another thing I'll add to that, I was on vacation with my brother, who is corporate America. God bless him. He's one of my biggest heroes. He's been in corporate America. Same job since he graduated college 23, whatever years ago. And we're talking big, high level corporate America. He is really, climbed the ranks in corporate America. He tells me funny stories all the time. But I mean, we're talking about a $70 billion publicly traded company he works for. Anyways, we were on the beach one time when I first got out, 06 timeframe. And he's like, yeah, this is my first vacation in 2 years. I'm like, yeah, I'm not playing that game either. It didn't sit with me. It just, nothing. I remember that conversation like it was yesterday. And I just thought, how is this even possible? And then, like I said, I had that one job for 3 weeks. And then I bounced around for a while. I'm going to school. Okay, what do you want to be? At first I thought I want to be a dentist, not even knowing how to spell the word dentist. And then I shadowed a dentist. And I'm like, yep, no, don't want to be a dentist. And then, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll be a pharmacist. For some reason, I had medical in my head, which – that's crazy because I pretty much failed every chemistry thing and this and that in college you could take. So very quickly ruled that out. And then to sum up that phase of my life, I met a gentleman in college by the name of Bob Stevens, who was a very successful entrepreneur in the builder real estate market industry. He would build very large developments and whatnot. And he was working on a project and he kind of just mentored me. We'd go to breakfast and all kinds of things on a very frequent basis. Sometimes he would bring me to meetings. Not sure why. I added no value. And that's when I kind of initial vision into owning your own business, being an entrepreneur. And that was the start of it.
Nice. So I bet you didn't know why I was bringing you in. But now that you're an entrepreneur and you are sitting in his shoes, so to speak, or standing in his shoes, I could see bringing someone in just for the mentorship aspect to show what you're doing because it feels good. If you right. can help someone else figure out their totally. Own direction, figure out the path, it makes you and I feel good. At least I feel good. I don't speak for you. I love teaching and mentoring and coaching and helping. And to the point, I think I give too much advice. Sometimes I get yelled at by Giselle. I talk too much and I ramble. Hence, I have a podcast now. But that's, you know, it's rewarding for, I think, a lot of entrepreneurs to take a quote unquote young buck or young doe under their arm or wing and mentor them. And I think probably that entrepreneur felt that way about you.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, the mentor, so I'm doing it right now to actually a former Marine in his mid-20s.
Let me help you.
Yeah.
It's a Marine, never a former Marine. No, active duty. He's no longer active duty or a prior service, but once a Marine, always a Marine. So all the Marines listening will attack you for saying that. So just
I thought you couldn't say ex-Marine. You have to say former Marine. Because I said ex-Marine one time. You're like, we're never an ex-Marine. We're just a former Marine. But my
not
apologies.
Former, because that's the same thing. It's a prior service. Maybe it's changed now. So I was your prior active service because you're a Marine for life. So former and or ex is one of the same.
So just for
clarification and hooah to you for trying. So appreciate that.
Yeah. I tried. But yeah, so I'm mentoring him. He's in his mid-20s and he's a hard charger. But you don't know what you don't know. And business is hard and it can be learned. I think it's a skill set, but you don't know what you don't know, especially when you're first starting out.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. So one of the things you shared and you were vulnerable about, we originally had our first discussion, our initial discussion, was that you did fail in a business and you tried to launch one. And that's a little bit of humble pie. Would you be open to sharing about that experience?
Yeah, I took a couple humble pies straight to the face. This was my first company. It was a tech company. We were a tech startup. And back in the days when tech was sexy and, you know, Facebook and all that. Yeah. But I had an idea for a tech company. I had no clue. An idea just popped in my head one day. And after about a month of thinking about it, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I had no clue about anything, no clue about funding strategies and how to get seed capital to get a company off the ground and hiring. And not only hiring tech people to build. I mean, we were a tech company. We had 100,000 of custom code. We had, at our peak, we had a PhD computer scientist on payroll, but I'm digressing now. But we got up to 12 employees and we won many battles, but ultimately lost the war. It was just a learning experience on every front possible. On paper, we were valued at about $2.1 million at our peak. And then about, my son was born in May. So rewind to September. My son was born in May of 13.
Okay.
And in September of 12 is when I shut the company down. And we just couldn't get enough follow-on funding, our Series A, our first institutional round, to come in. We had a lot of offers, a couple on the hook, structured the whole package, which I learned a lot about that. But We never did get our that financing round that came through. You know, then we went down to a skeleton staff and you name it, trying to keep it alive. And then ultimately, it just there was just no juice left in the tank. It was just impossible. And I remember renting a truck, pulling up to the office, loading up all the furniture and everything, and then just driving home. My then wife, pregnant with our son. And then, yeah, that was a big learning experience.
I appreciate you sharing that. And as hopefully we turn this into a video at some point, but most listeners, this is going to be an audio podcast. But on the wall behind you is a picture from Monopoly, and it's the piece for the waterworks, the utilities, and it says cash flow.
Right.
And I think what you just discussed is one of the most important factors with any business. You must have cash flow. You must have revenue coming in, and that revenue must not be just receivables. You actually need cash. You got to get paid, because if you don't get paid, you can't pay the bills. You don't have a business. You can have an idea, you're gonna have a concept, but cash flow is everything for the business. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. Cash flow is vital. It's the lifeline of any business. You can't make payroll. I mean, I say a lot of things are black and white, and there's a gray area. But not payrolls on Friday and payrolls 20 grand and I got 15 grand in the bank. That's not black and white. That's pretty, hey, I got payroll. Not like, you know, other things, rent. I mean, cash is vital. And I love everybody when they say, oh, we want to do good. And there's a place for that. And yes, you have to have that. But if you don't have revenue and cash, yeah, you're not in business.
It's the biggest, hardest thing. So when I left too, was getting access to capital. You go from W-2. To all of a sudden you have your own business and you have to buy the tech stack. You have to get everything organized. You need a bookkeeper. You need your logo. You need your website. You need insurance. You need workers' comp. You got to get a payroll system, get everything in place. And humbly, that's the hardest piece, I think, for a lot of entrepreneurs, is finding that initial source of capital. And there's no one right or wrong way of doing it. But for most, humbly, I know you say quit and go all in. What would you say about if you've got the corporate gig, which is pretty much an umbrella, it's a parachute to save you, save up, kind of keep both going so you've got some cash coming in and start slowly if you're going to. Otherwise, most entrepreneurs have to give up equity. They have to give up ownership to get that capital injection. So I would say if you don't want to sacrifice ownership and full control, right, you have to find some source of cash flow to get that baby up and running and off the ground until you get the revenue coming in from sales. And then we talk about sales, because you have a great idea, but if no one knows about it, how is anyone going to know that you can help them? What problems are you solving if no one knows, if you don't have sales experience? So is that a challenge you had with your product? Is it getting the word out there to get the revenue?
Yeah, so much to unpack there. I'll say one thing first. You say the equity thing. I'm a big fan. Personally, again, just my two cents,
sure,
of giving up equity if there's value.
If there's value.
Yeah. So is somebody going to write you a $50,000 check, a $20,000 check? I'll give up an appropriate and acceptable amount for that. Because what's the age-old saying? Would you rather have 80% of a million-dollar company or 100% of nothing? So, yeah, I'll give up 5, 10% for 15, 20 grand to get some seed capital to get it off the going all day long. That's just me, though. I fully understand the flip side to that. And if you look at any major company, and also I think I want to touch on, if I can, and this is when I mentor people, this is where I start with is, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was like, we're going to build this billion-dollar company. Yeah. And it's like, no, we're not. So, you know, I didn't know. I had to clearly define what I wanted out of it. So now that I'm 40, a little bit older than 27, 28, right. I've clearly defined what I want out of life personally. So I know for a fact I won't build a billion-dollar. I know for a fact I won't even build a $50 million company. Why? I don't want to work that hard. I'm taking Fridays. That's just me. I'm taking Fridays off. I'm dropping my son at school every morning and every afternoon, picking him up. I'm that dude. I'm in, you know, 60 days out of the year vacation. So I'm that guy who's, I don't want to say lifestyle type business, but I'm that guy who's going to generate a million or two in revenue, have a decent staff, and we're a little family owned, if you will, easy, very high touch business. I know I don't want to go any higher. And a lot of companies, I think, get caught in that dead zone where it's like you're 1 to 2 million and then you're maybe 15 million and above. It's in that dead zone or that middle zone where you need a lot more money to scale, you need a lot more staff. I personally don't want that headache. And I know that about myself. I realized that going through one of my biggest failures. I'm probably just talking too much at this point.
No, you're good. And this is, I'm not, if I didn't think it was good stuff, I would jump in. I think you know me by now. So I wanted to hear what you had to say. I'll share what I think you're describing is what we call in my world, a lifestyle business.
Sure.
It's a lifestyle. It funds your lifestyle. It lets you be a father. It lets you, it lets you live the lifestyle you want and provides for the means for you to take care of your family and your clients. So at the end of the day, it's kind of, I was watching one of the sharks from Shark Tank. I probably can't mention names here, but one of the sharks was sharing a lot of the companies now, they start with this altruistic mission about just helping some organization or some people or something. And the day came back, you cannot do that. Your business has to be about serving your clients first.
Yes.
Taking your employees second and your family third. That's what it has to do. And so I will humbly share what I wouldn't say struggling with, but I'm having, and I won't call it a failure, but I'll call it a learning point, is I've been reaching out and I've made the complete switch just to working with veteran entrepreneurs, and I'm having conversations with veterans all day long, 3 to 5 conversations a day. Most are in that hyper growth mode, or they're still trying to figure it out. They're the new entrepreneur. And so I'm giving, but there's no business opportunity for me at the same time. And so I'm actually, after having these conversations, 25 to 30 different ones, I'm realizing before I use my time, because I only have so much time in the day and I can only give back so much, because I also take every Wednesday afternoon off to spend time with my son, and every Thursday morning I drive him to school, and it's 120 miles and takes 3 hours. So I don't start my Thursday work day until after 11 o'clock. And my Wednesdays, I stop at 11:30 because I jump in the car and drive 120 miles to pick him up and take him home. So I even tell my clients, if you try and reach me on Wednesday afternoons or Thursdays, I'm out of touch because I'm with my son. And that's my party. And I choose to do that. And I will do that. So I'm learning you can give and give and give and give. But at the end of the day, you got to take care of your business first. Yeah. And so I'm giving, but I'm pairing back more with giving to entities that can also help me. So it's a win-win. It has to be a win for me in my business, and I can't just help, or I'll be out of business, right? Because there's only so much time of the day, and you only have so much emotional energy too.
So true.
Right?
And I think guys like you and I, we like to give, we like to help. And it, just like any business, there comes a point in time where you have to say, you know, this is my customer. And if you don't fall within these parameters, I wish I could help you, but unfortunately I can't. And to touch on one last thing, you mentioned about the corporate America quitting, going all in, when's that time? That was the precursor. I think that's when it comes time to define what you want. If you want a side hustle, I want to make an extra $1,000 a month. Okay. Yeah. Don't quit your job, obviously. But if you have any hopes in turning something into a real full-blown company, there has to be that time you do pull the trigger and go full-time. Otherwise, in my personal belief, I mean, it's going to take full-time attention at some point in time.
I agree, but you've got to have the cash flow to keep you alive. You've got to have the cash flow to keep you alive, and you do that.
You do.
So I think a phenomenal, or an example I see a lot, are realtors. A lot of realtors, it's normally the wife, but they have a husband that's providing main income. So there's stability. When you're a brand new realtor, you have no clients, you have no customer base, you've got nothing.
Sure.
So you can go out there and work and hustle. And if there's no revenue coming in while you're building your brand, you're going to starve. So you have to have some source of capital or cash flow to sustain you through the ramp up period.
I agree.
If you don't have that, don't take the jump, because you're just going to be burning cash. Nothing's coming in, and you're going to go BK, or your credit card debt is going to be so high because you're using credit cards to finance the business. Then you're at 13, 18, 19%. And then even you get a little revenue coming in, you would be making to pay off that credit card is all going to interest, right? So you're just expense through the roof.
I will tell you this, and I don't think they would mind me saying this, but to that point, and then the flip side of that is our mutual client that you do their 401k.
Yeah.
They're out of Texas. The husband of Christy, who you met, he's a former Navy SEAL, and he started a restaurant, a very, to this day, a successful restaurant. But He quit, went all in. They cashed in their 401k and they rolled the dice and took a dream. And for him, it worked. I fully understand for a lot, it doesn't. But that's one example. I mean, and restaurants different. I don't know if you can do a restaurant like, you know, part time or half time. I mean, he had to go all in. But to your point, the wife was working. So they did have some, you know, obviously cash flow, and they cashed in a lot of their stuff and bet on themselves. And so far they're winning.
No, that's good. I think we have on a previous podcast had a gentleman, Sam, who's also in Texas, and he shared and I'm not endorsing this, just have to make that disclosure. I'm not endorsing doing anything other than just sharing a lesson I heard and learned, that he found an organization where he could use his 401k as capital to fund his business versus cashing out and paying taxes and penalties. So most of us, if you're in corporate America, your 401k, besides your home, if you're able to afford a home, is your biggest source of capital. You got your retirement account. And if you're trying to build your business today, you'll worry about retirement tomorrow. And a lot of people do that. They do pull out their 401k or they cash their 401k in. I would share, again, I can't endorse anything, can't recommend anything, but there are ways, if you're an individual, you can roll your 401k from corporate America into what they call solo or Unik. And with a 401k, you can borrow against it up to 50 grand and you can have 5 years to pay it back. So you can use a third party administrator that can help you do that. There's a couple of vendors that do that. Again, I'm not recommending, not endorsing. I have to say that, but there are strategies out there. And so I think one of the big lessons from this podcast is if you're going to start a business, you got to have cash flow and you have a source of capital. And the more of it that you can own and control and not have to give up control, I think the better. But I like what you're saying. If you need to find some sort of capital investor and they're willing to give up, or you're willing to give up a respectable share, is that a fair statement? Respectable share
of
equity?
Yep. Yeah.
As long as you get massive value for that and that capital, you use that capital wisely, right? And that's the biggest question. I got some capital now. How do I deploy that capital to get the biggest ROI? So I ask you, when you had your own, let's shift now and talk about your current firm, your current business, because I think you've gone from having to shut your doors.
David, I wanted to know, when did you feel you had the cash flow to make your company feasible?
Great question. So after the tech startup failure, that's when I got into the insurance business. So whole different ball game, whole different personal mindset on that front. So are we shifting gears to the insurance side of the house now?
Yes.
So insurance is a good industry. I would say it's a great industry. As a matter of fact, I wrote a blog why every veteran should look at insurance if they're looking for something new to start. It's on my website. It's one of our most read blogs. And to touch on that for a second, insurance is massive. You know, people joke, but you could do anything in insurance, from data analytics if you want to work for a company, to on the sales side. It's very easy to start your own company. The barrier to entry is very low. You literally need to take a test, get your license, and you can go sell insurance the next day if you want to be on the broker agency side of the house, which I am on, just full disclosure. So, and then I fell into a specialty initially line of insurance, as we call it, called employee benefits. So 67 million plus people get their health insurance from their employer. Behind the scenes on most of those is an employee benefit consultant or employee benefit producer, as they call them, which is what I am. So we go into the company and then we structure the deal. We engineer the benefits to make a financial equation, or to make it make sense financially. So quick example, okay, you have 100 employees, you're in Phoenix. Okay, well, you got this many female, this many male. This is your average age group of the employees because age matters. These are the hospital systems in Phoenix because networks matter. They have different reimbursement schedules with the carriers, all that kind of stuff. So we structure the entire deal, shop the market, go back to the CEO, head of HR, some other people, and we say, these are your options for your employee benefit healthcare plan for your company. So again, that's what I do in the employee benefit sector. Everybody needs it. It's a much needed product. So if you're talking about just business right now, a lot of people need what you're selling. So to answer your question, sorry to ramble on there.
No, it's good.
You know,
it's fine.
I got in very easily and with very little money. And then, yes, my first year in business, I did take a loan to grow the business. I took one equity investor for 10 grand, who got a very low very low percentage. So it was very beneficial to me. And then I did take a loan. I would have took more equity, but raising money's hard and it's a pain in the ass. Yep. And you go after these investors, like it's an investment. This ain't a favor. So, okay, investor, okay, when am I going to get my money back? What do you think this is going to be worth in the future? How am I going to get my money back? Do you have to sell in order for me to liquid, you know, become liquid or whatever have you? So I didn't want to go, I personally didn't want to go down the equity route, and I did have somebody there that would give a loan. So back in 2015, when I started my first and, you know, still there today, one equity investor, one debt note, 2-year payment, paid that off. Good. No problem. And then just kind of been cash flowing it to date, kept expenses very low. I didn't hire my first employee until 2.5 years later. I did everything, which kind of sucked, but I was the account manager. I was this. As a matter of fact, we had all the emails like info@billing@, and I would do an email to like, hey, billing@. I'd be like, hey, Jessica, please respond. But it would come to me. I had like no employees. I just want to make it look like I had employees and stuff at the time. Awesome. So we serviced our clients very well. We really understood the industry of employee benefits because you do got to know what you're doing. And we just kind of organically grew.
Two questions. One, I'm going to take you back. When did you make up your mind that you wanted to go into insurance? Because you went from tech and failed and your wife's home with a baby and pregnant. When did you like, oh, let's start an insurance? How did that happen?
Great question. It's a funny joke in our industry. Nobody wakes up in high school and says, I'm going to be in insurance when I grow older. I mean, Everybody kind of just falls into it. And a buddy of mine by the name of John Kay, who I knew him during my tech days, and he was in the insurance space doing some high level stuff. And he's like, I need some help. Why don't you just help me out for like a quick couple months? And that's when I fell into insurance by helping him out. Then I was mentored by somebody in the industry, in employee benefits, a group out of Las Vegas. Big shout out to Lori and Kelly, Waymark Insurance Services. They mentored me. And then I'm like, yeah, I could do this on my own. And then in June of 2015, opened up my own company.
Well, let's talk about that then. So how did you feel when you were with them having mentors? How long did it take you to feel confident in your own skill set where you said, I could do this on my own?
Very quickly. And I knew, I can't work for anybody. I knew this was only temporary, and I knew, okay. And I went to work every day and sat in a cubicle, and it sucked. It sucked the soul out of my life. I mean, they were good people because I love them, and it was a great learning experience. But every day showing up in that effing cubicle, I had to tell myself, number one, you got a 10-month-old son at the house. Number two, this is only temporary. You're learning. This is only temporary. So the second I felt even remotely confident, for me, I think it was like 7-8 months maybe. And it was actually a good timing because they actually got bought by a larger insurance company. So it was kind of like I either had to go or leave. So I was kind of faced with a decision. So that's when I was like,
That helps too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was definitely the come to Jesus meeting. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go do my own thing.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Then you're on your own. You hung your own shingle, so to speak. You had your own brand. You came up with a name. How did you obtain your very first client?
Yeah, great question. My first client was within that year. We brought up multiple clients the first year, but one of the first was the first ever Denny's franchise in America. It was actually out in California. The grandson of the guy who started it was running it. It was a referral. And
referral from where? Because let's dig in. Referral from where? Where did that relationship come from?
Funny story. A year prior, when I first got into the insurance industry, start networking and meeting people, I met this guy named Neil.
When you say stop, I'm going to ask another one. When you say networking, bring me back to that. Was it in-person event? I want to go back the entire process. How did you find this person to make that introduction?
I used to network a lot, and by a lot means anything I could go to, industry conventions. You know, there's always one in our industry, and in-person stuff here in Phoenix. In the beginning, I used to go to everything I could and just meet anybody I could. I don't remember exactly, but I know it was at some in-person networking event, probably over drinks, and met this guy named Neil. And a year later, he literally helped deliver my first client.
So when you say deliver, so you just had cocktails, you had a little connection, you guys hit it off a little bit, and then
So you, how long was your door, where your doors open, you're hanging your shingle when you're out there trying to, and you had no clients, right? You first off, you have zero clients. How long was it from, I got a business, we're in business, I passed my licenses, I have zero clients, so I have a client. How long did that take?
Yeah, it's a little funny question, and here's why. In our industry, you have what's called open enrollment season.
Okay.
And for employee benefits, like you can't just, you know, well, the majority of business in our industry is a January 1 effective, and then it's a 12-month contract. That's 80% of companies in America. So I opened up in June, and I had to wait 6 months to really onboard all the clients and actually get revenue. Now you're talking to them, you're structuring the benefits, you're putting them through what's called open enrollment, but they don't actually get on the books and start paying until January, which is one of the reasons why I took that money to sustain me through those months, if that makes sense.
So you're living lean, just trying to survive.
Oh yeah. No staff, no overhead.
Got it. So you got a computer, right? You had a computer and a license.
Yeah, pretty much.
Work in the living room, no office space.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you said Neil was his name, who referred you that business.
Right.
So talk about that. Talk about the interaction and your first call with your very first client on your own.
So we had the call. They were interested. And I said, great. Well, I got to come out and meet you. So still having very little money. I mean, had enough money for gas and a hotel room. So I drove from Phoenix to outside of San Diego area where they are, and went to their corporate headquarters for their Denny's franchise. And they had like 3 or 4, you know, restaurant locations, and met with them. We hit them off, and I had that client for 2 years.
Nice. And so why did they come and choose you versus their current broker or advisor?
Great, 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 great question, which throws another, wrench into the thing. So not sure if you remember, but around the 2015 time frame, this very, I'll say large, for lack of a better, complicated law called the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare was passed. And you could make a strong argument that Obamacare is one of the largest shifts to healthcare since Medicare. And they came out with the employer mandate. And talk about marketing for a second. I like to consider myself a decent marketing guy, not great, but the Affordable Care Act was just coming out. So I marketed myself as an expert in the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, because there's a lot of regulations and filings and rules employers have to do now. So that's the reason, one of the reasons they, and there were a lot of brokers that were in the industry for many, many, many years. And when Obamacare hit, they're just like, we're not messing with this. We're just going to retire or just not go after certain books of business. And just, it's very complicated. So that's what set me apart when I first started.
So you were willing to put the time in to learn a new skill set, which is all new for you. So you're not changing old habits, and you had the grit, and you faked it till you made it.
Yeah. Worked my ass off and kept overhead low. That was key for us. I didn't have to have an office and 4 software developers making 10 grand each a month and all that kind of stuff. So just kind of went on, and I went from making zero money, and then I made $128,000 in my first 6 months. I put enough business on the books, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I was broke, man. I was driving to the hospital to deliver my son with negative $10 to my name. That's a fact. To go from that and a 400 credit score and yada 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 to making 128 grand your first month. I literally one day my eye almost got a little sweaty. I almost shed a tear. And back in the day when I saw those numbers, and I was just like, yeah,
this is awesome. That's a great story. That's a great story. Well, we'll finish on this note. Tell me about your business now then. How big's your practice now, and what's your ideal client now?
Yeah, so to your point about kind of shifting gears, because of the podcast that I started for fun during COVID, I did see a huge kind of void in the military veteran community. So I launched about a year ago, we've been live for about 6 months, but been working on it a while, a new brand, a new company, solely taking care of transitioning service members, military spouses, and the 2.5 million veteran-owned businesses, and providing a whole suite of insurance products for them, from life insurance to obviously on the business stuff. And that's Fortis Life Group. That's where my passion's at. I love it. I love talking to that community and helping them. So that's where my attention's at today.
I think we're there together, brother, because that's the shift I made several months ago just to serve the veteran entrepreneurs, and just you're one, I'm one. It just makes for such a great conversation. And we can have conversations like this. And was anything you and I talked about today scripted, or did you have any idea what I was going to ask you before today?
Oh, no, totally off the cuff. And yeah, I love it like that.
Awesome. So if I'm a veteran entrepreneur and I have some risk I want to mitigate or hedge, how do I reach you? How do I find you? And how do I find your podcast? Let's tell me about your podcast.
Yeah, the podcast, The David Johnson Show. Not my idea to name it that, for the record, but that's the name and it stuck. So mainly on YouTube, we do a lot of video stuff. So you plus all the audio platforms at The David Johnson Show. And then that's the passion. Then the insurance side of the house is Fortis, F as in Fox, O-R-T-I-S, Fortis Life Group. And I'm David at FortisLifeGroup.com.
Awesome. So if any venture entrepreneurs have some questions about risk at all, you can reach out to David. And then anything about managing money, asset management, corporate benefits, that's my side as well. So 401k consulting, profit sharing, pension plan. So you and I are going to have a nice relationship. I'm looking forward to growing it with you, brother. It, literally, you're
likewise.
Another mother. Like, we have this synergy, which is awesome. You, like, I have one of my designations to CLU is a master's in life insurance. So I've got the book smarts, but you've got the practical education. So I'm happy to refer you my clients who have risks that they need to hedge or mitigate, because you've got the experience versus I have the book smarts, right? So you've done it. So I'm very excited about this relationship, and I owe you because you already referred me a client, right? So I'm in the hole, which is where you want to be. So I owe you a relationship too.
No
which
worries.
Is great. So if anyone's to reach out to me to help me fill that hole and make David whole for that referral for me, I'm Brett at Strategic Wealth Endeavor, or Brett, SWE90.com, SWE90.com. Patrice, back to you.
And I'm simply going to say book smarts meets experience. What a better combination. You can't get that, right?
Boom.
Everybody, subscribe to this podcast to know when the latest episode is ready for you. Share with friends and colleagues. And really, just thanks for being with us.
Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass podcast. Don't forget to click the follow button to become notified when new episodes become available. Securities offered through IFP Securities, LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through IFP Investors, LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, a registered investment advisor. IFP and Strategic Wealth Endeavor, INC, are not affiliated. The views expressed are that of the host and are for informational purposes only, and in no event should be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Neither IFP Investors LLC, IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, nor their affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. The information given herein is taken from sources that IFP Advisors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners,